This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hi, Jason Gibbs, Joy Production Manager. It's Radiothon time. We still need Joy and we need your support. If you appreciate our free podcast service, our voice for the LGBTI community globally, and the volunteers that make our service possible, please sign up, renew your Joy membership, or make a tax-deductible donation before June 30 to keep our service possible. You may win a prize. Head to joy.org.au and click on either the Become a Member or Donate tabs to support us. If you appreciate our podcast service, let us know in the comments section when making your donation. Joy Podcasts, where you want them, when you want them, at joy.org.au and on iTunes. Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast, brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
Now, coming up now, Neil Mitchell from 3AW spoke to Victorian Parole Board Chief, and basically the Parole Board Chief whacks the PM and reveals some pretty startling communication breakdown. Have a listen to this.
But the Chair of the Victorian Adult Parole Board, Judge Peter Cousins, has agreed to be interviewed. Judge, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
Now, I know we can't talk about specifics in this case, but in general terms, is there any concern that the parole board has made an error?
From the point of view of my review of the file, the decision of the board to release this person on parole for a relatively short period of time on strict conditions was a proper decision based on material that we had received. The board is a decision-making body. It's not an administrative body in terms of managing prisoners within the system. We receive material from corrections and from other sources. On the basis of that material, the board, in a two-tier process, decides, bearing in mind the paramount consideration, which is the safety and protection of the community, whether a prisoner should be released on parole, when he should be released on parole, and on what conditions he should be released on parole. From my review of the file, that process has been followed completely and appropriately.
Okay. A number of people, parolees, I was talking about before, about 2013-14, I think it was 60 parolees, yes, committed serious violent crimes. We're down to about 5 this year.
Yes, that's right.
When you have a case like that, and when there is a violent crime, as has been committed here by a person on parole, is it reviewed to see what you can learn from it? What happens?
Well, I have looked at it, yeah, myself. The coroner, when conducting a coronial inquest, will have our file with him or her, depending on who conducts the inquest, and if there are adverse comments to be made, one would expect them to be made. That process followed in the wake of the tragic deaths of Jill Maher, Sarah Pataki, yes, Sharon Dinsley in late 2012-2013, and in a number of instances, the coroner, Judge Ian Gray, was critical of the board. If there's room for criticism of the board, then one can expect that to occur. But that will be a matter for the coroner to determine on all of the material, not just what's contained within the parole board file, but in corrections files, as a result of what will be an extensive investigation by police and federal agencies about this person's status and his behaviours.
Okay. The Prime Minister had this to say, so it's almost a question for you this morning.
It's all very well to say the parole system is this, the parole system is that. Here's the question. How did this bloke, this criminal, this violent man with a long history of violence and criminality and a long history of involvement with violent extremism and terrorism, how did he get parole?
I know you're able to answer it, but are you willing?
I am willing to answer it, although, yep, I can't go into specifics on the basis that there will be a coronial inquest.
Yes.
But can I just explain to you and your listeners the process that occurs here? It doesn't start with the parole board. The process starts with sentencing. under Victoria's sentencing laws, whenever a person is convicted and sentenced to a period of 2 years or more, the court must impose a non-parole period unless the court considers it inappropriate to do so because of the nature of the offence or the person's criminal record. Now, in the case of Mr. Keir, the sentencing judge on the 12th of October 2012 imposed a sentence of 5 years and 6 months with a non-parole period of 3 years. She obviously determined that it was not inappropriate to impose a non-parole period.
Yeah.
And if she decided that, I can assure you she would have been appealed and overturned. Very, very few people in Victoria are sentenced to straight sentences up in terms of matters from 2 years and above without a non-parole period. Can I give you two examples of the most heinous offences, Neil, where this has been followed?
Yes.
The rape and murder of Gillian Maher, a dreadful case with which the community generally is aware, Adrian Bailey was sentenced to life with a non-parole period of 35 years.
Yeah.
Sean Price, who was convicted and sentenced to the murder of Massa Vukotic, another horrific crime, life with a non-parole period of 38 years. So they're two examples of the most heinous of offences where courts felt necessary to impose a non-parole period.
So when the Prime Minister says, why is he out, are you saying he's out because of the courts effectively said he would be?
No, that's the start of the process.
Yeah.
Then, in accordance with his rights, Mr. Keir made an application for parole. That's what he was entitled to do. That was he allowed to do under the sentence. Thereafter, the decision-making falls onto the Adult Parole Board to determine, on information conveyed to it, if he should be released on parole, when he should be released on parole, and on what conditions he should be released on parole. Now, I can tell you that in the case of Mr. Keir, his earliest eligible release date, in accordance with the non-parole period fixed by Her Honour, was the 8th of September 2015. The board determined, upon advice from corrections, that it was premature to release him on parole.
Yeah.
He had to improve his behaviours within the prison system. He had to engage in offender behaviour programs. And the board would then consider it. So his release was postponed for a year and 3 months. And it wasn't until December of 2016 that he was released on parole, with only 1 year on parole. His release date and the discharge date for his sentence is December of 2017. So the period that he would have been on parole was much less than what Her Honour had in mind. But that was because the board, with the support and on the advice of corrections, has determined he wasn't ready to be released. Now, in that ensuing period, the board received information that, A, he had been of good behaviour since February of 2015. Two, he'd undertaken offender behaviour programs, including alcohol and drugs and violence intervention programs. Three, he was prepared to engage in what's called a KISP program, which involves him dealing with any entrenched views in terms of radicalisation.
So it's sort of a de-radicalisation.
Yes,
you'd agreed to that. Yeah.
Yes, and so the board was informed about all of that, and then on the recommendation of corrections, in a very balanced and informative report, determined to allow him to be released on parole with strict conditions.
Yeah.
Residence, curfews, electronic monitoring, all of which he had complied with.
Okay.
There hadn't been a fault in terms of his compliance as far as we were concerned. The board received absolutely no information from either corrections or external services as to which would cause us to have any concerns about risk to the public.
I think you've probably answered in the way you talked about the de-radicalisation, but the board would be aware, even though he wasn't convicted, of his history of being accused in the terrorist incident.
That's right. right, we were.
Okay.
We received intelligence reports from police following the review that took place in 2013. Whenever we're dealing with a person who's described as a serious violent offender, and he was one because of the aggravated burglary charge for which he was convicted, that's called a serious violent offender.
But in this era of terrorism and the threat of terrorism, do you get information on people being on watch lists?
No. And can I assure you that we were not told anything along those lines, either at the time of the making of the order that he be released on parole or subsequently.
Really, really interesting. The parole board received no information about his terrorist background. Now, the second half of Neil Mitchell's interview with the chair of the Victorian Adult Parole Board. Have a listen. It's pretty good.
Should you be?
Can I just say
this? I asked the Prime Minister earlier. Should this information be shared with parole boards?
Of course it should be. And it should be shared with Corrections Victoria. Corrections Victoria have an extraordinarily difficult role. But I'm confident they do it exceptionally well. Following the reviews, enormous changes took place in terms of both the Adult Parole Board and Corrections Victoria, in terms of the administration of parolees. And we are the first to be told if there are any concerns, e.g., if a parolee, for example, has produced a drug screen which is positive for drugs, or if they've interfered with their electronic monitoring, or if they've breached their curfews.
So do you get any briefings from security agencies like ASIO or the Federal Police?
No. Up until now, the board has not. Can I just mention to you, Neil, I went through the file very, very carefully because I understand the grief that people have experienced, and I share in our enormous regret as to what occurred on this day, just as members of the community. So I want to emphasise that nothing I should say should diminish our realisation of the terrible damage that's been done here, both to police and to others in the community. But this is the only information that the board has in its file that was received from the Federal Counterterrorism Organisation. And this is very important that people understand this. Because whilst on parole, this man had complied with his parole. We had been told nothing about him that would indicate any suggestion of risk. Had we been told, we would have acted. This is the only correspondence we've received from the federal agencies on the 2nd of May, to whom it may concern. I'm conducting inquiries in relation to the contact details for Tahir, who is currently on parole. I have property to return to him from a counter-terrorism investigation. I have a current address and a disconnected phone number. I seek to confirm his address, but more importantly, after a contact phone number. Now, this is a month before the incident. Now, you would have thought, Neil, that if the federal authorities were concerned about this person as a risk, they would have been more concerned about that rather than returning property to him. Our manager, quite correctly and responsibly, contacted the sender of that email to confirm the note and what they were acquiring, and it was confirmed that all they were interested in was returning property to him.
Yeah.
That's a month before this terrible event. Now, I'm not being critical of the author of the email, but I think, if anything, that indicates, on the face of it at least, there was nothing that came to the notice of the board which would give it any cause for concern.
Yeah. Judge, a couple of other things quickly. The Premier today has said that he would look at handling certain powers to the federal government on matters of people on terrorism, which is, I guess that's a political matter, it's not for you.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And if that happens, so be it.
The Premier himself has said that, and the Prime Minister rather, has said that the Attorney General perhaps has to take personal responsibility for some parole decisions.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's what happens in the Commonwealth system.
Yes. Would it work here?
That's a matter.
Fair enough. I can see the danger.
He might not want it. But that's a matter for him. But we are a statutory body. We are dependent on legislation. If there's changes to legislation which diminishes our role in any shape or form, we accept it.
Yeah.
We are creatures of statute.
It's reported today that the case management system that you're operating with is not funded, is not up and running. In fact, it's only one, the only part of the Callanan report not implemented. That's reported in the Australian newspaper. Is that accurate?
It's to the extent that a case flow system is in the course of being put on into effect. It's a very expensive and time-consuming issue, but it's well underway, and we would expect it to be operational within the next 12 months.
Okay, so I don't need to go and argue for more resources for you?
No. Look, we would never say no to more resources, but we have sufficient resources to ensure, and we have enormous active staff involved in the development of that caseflow system. It's well and truly on the way, and we thank government and all of our people concerned here for all the work that they're doing.
Judge, I thank you very much for speaking to us. Do you feel the criticism of the board's been a little unfair here?
Look, to the extent, it's understandable. People react in the heat of the moment, and I don't say that flippantly. But I hope, Neil, that your comments yesterday and Senator Hinch's comments, which support the very significant transformation that has taken place in the parole system since 2013, do, with the benefit of time, resonate with your listeners. Can I wouldn't say this lightly. The system, thanks to bipartisan support, is so much better than it was. And your reference to those statistics are tangible evidence of that. The other thing I would point out, 70% plus of parolees are getting through their parole. That's an outstanding achievement. The numbers of people being cancelled is dropping all the time. Why? Because people are being better prepared for parole. Their applications are being very carefully monitored and scrutinised. And if, whilst on parole, they show signs of an escalation of risk, and that's short of actually reoffending, we consider cancellation, and we do cancel.
I guess there's one question still in my mind. Again, you mightn't be willing to answer, even though you'd be able. If the board had been aware that the man was on a watch list, is he likely to have got parole?
Neil, I can't comment on that. It was speculative. It would depend upon the information that was conveyed to the board and the risks described that he posed.
I understand.
Can I just say one more thing, Neil?
Sure, yes.
Do you mind? Because I know how precious your time is.
Oh, this is a rare event.
The Prime Minister was advocating yesterday that people convicted of violent offences shouldn't be given parole. With the greatest respect, that's a most reckless claim. If people are released, violent offenders are released without parole, they go out of prison without any supervision, without any monitoring, without any conditions, without any curfews, without any monitoring, it would be a recipe for greater calamities that exist under the present system. Parole has been shown to be a most effective way of reducing the risks of recidivism, because people are these days under our system in Victoria, which is now a benchmark. In terms of reference in the Queensland situation last year, made reference to Victoria.
Yes.
So I think we need to point that out. It's very easy to say, let them stay in. But the fact of the matter is, in Victoria, there are 4,500 people serving sentences in round figures. All but 11 will be released into the public sooner or later. Now, surely, if they're released, it's desirable from the point of view of public safety that they be released on conditions, under supervision, under monitoring, with the very real risk that they'll be returned to custody as soon as they do anything untoward, which the board is concerned about in terms of escalating their risk.
Judge, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Neil. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
A couple of really important points there. The Chief of the Parole Board said the only communication they'd had from the federal security authorities were they sent them an email saying, oh, we need to contact this guy, we've got an address, we've got a disconnected phone number, we've got some property to return to him. What a bunch of tools. Why didn't they tell the parole board, hey, guess what? You're considering putting this guy on parole. He's got terrorism convictions. He's on our watch list. Oh, no, we've got some property to return to him. And Malcolm Turnbull, understand the separation of powers, Malcolm.
Go Macca.
Right. this is an important issue, and I am not soft on terrorism. I don't believe that the solution they're coming up with and will work. And I'll tell you why. The Prime Minister says that you won't get parole. As the Chief of the Parole Board said, these people will get released eventually. Surely it is better, one, that we're informed about other activities these people have been in, and if we make a decision to put them on parole, they will actually have some monitoring, rather than eventually they will get out and we won't know what they're doing. But the key here is the government, the federal government, attacked the state government and the parole board and other state parole boards, Liberal governments, Labor governments, and said, why are you letting these people out? Monas in New South Wales, you know, the Lint murders, right? Well, the feds didn't advise the New South Wales police. I don't know. Perhaps they had a phone they wanted to return to him.
And Macquarie 86 asks, would it not make sense for the board itself to check for themselves if he was on the watch list?
Yes, but again, you've got an issue about privacy legislation.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's very easy for politicians on all sides to say, oh, this is what we should do. I say to you, Malcolm Turnbull, and to George Brandis, when your government contacts the Victorian Parole Board, not to say, this guy, right, you're considering a parole, but you know what? We're not going to tell you he's got a terrorist past. We want to return his phone to him. Right? Where is the sense in that? And you then grandstand and accuse the parole board and the Victorian government and other governments of playing fast and loose with public safety. Get real, be honest, understand the separation of powers. Yes, we need to make sure these people are properly controlled or detained, but don't talk shit.
And don't play cheap politics.
Yes. Get it right, Malcolm, George Brandis, you're both lawyers, apparently eminent lawyers. Show us you are.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.